Well, I was very afraid. I was more than afraid. It was probably the worst thing I ever had to do in my life, to issue the code.
A retired air traffic controller talks about an unusual order on September 11th that put a passenger jet in danger. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 9th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, life on the Alaska side of the Bering Strait.
We've had people trying to go to Russia on a bathtub to a kite surfer or just plain swimming.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
A decade after the attacks on September 11, 2001, APRN has uncovered new information regarding the events that caused a Korean 747 en route to New York and scheduled to stop in Anchorage for fuel to be diverted from Anchorage to Whitehorse, Canada. NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, which is a joint Alaskan-Canadian military partnership, had control of the airways and had requested that Canada allow international flights to be diverted to their airports. As in so many things that day, there was confusion, anxiety, and some fear that the Korean jet may have hijackers on board. The plane began squawking 7500, a code meaning it had been hijacked. The military says it was a miscommunication between the pilot and air traffic control. But the air traffic controller who dealt with the plane as it approached Anchorage says it was a direct command to the pilot. Retired air traffic controller Rick Wilder says he is still haunted by the incident because so many lives were at stake. He says when he first received the order to tell the pilot to squawk 7500, he refused.
I was astounded. I didn't even know what to say. It was just so off the wall. I just told him I wouldn't do it. And I kind of gave some reasons for it. The fact that the F-15s were trailing him, that they were there. They could be a little trigger happy because of the events going on. I mean, everybody was on edge. I've never seen an aircraft, you know, been told to squawk 7500 or hijack with fighters on them, but I could just imagine what would happen. So I refused. I told the supervisor that would be certain destruction of the aircraft. In my opinion, it could be. I mean, I was definitely wrong, which was nice. I mean, I was real happy about that. But that's what I was feeling. That's what I told them. So I just refused.
What happened?
They left. They went back. Another convening, I guess, up at the watch desk. A little more. I'm not sure if the managers at Anchorage Center thought it was reasonable that I denied that and that, okay, we really don't need them to have to do this. But a supervisor came back later. I'm not sure how long of a time gap it was, but he came back and said, headquarters is ordering that aircraft to squawk hijack. So that was a little more direct, and I realized it was coming from another location. And I also realized that the person that was probably ordering it, I never really thought about any kind of nefarious reasons or anything that could be going on. I have no idea, even to this day, I don't know why, but I thought, well, I hope it's just not some desk jockey up there, you know, wanting to order, you know, tell people what to do and, you know, not really thinking about it. Because I had no idea if the person making this decision was a controller and knew what it meant, knew the weight of what that aircraft doing meant with F-15s or, you know, fighters on it.
And when you told the Korean pilot, squawk 7500, he complied. Were you surprised by that?
No, that's one reason I didn't want to do it, because I think if it was an American carrier, they wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done it. As a commercial pilot when I was flying, I would have never done that. I would have thought that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. I'll do anything, but I won't do that because, you know, if my aircraft's not being interfered with, that's just somewhere you don't want to go. I think if any other carrier had been asked other than an Asian-based aircraft, probably wouldn't have done it. But the Korean culture or I'd just say maybe the Asian culture, is a little different. They would do things that we asked them to do without a lot of questioning. They would do things if they had the ability to do it. So I knew he was going to do it.
And he did. He agreed to that. Do you think at that time he was aware that he was being followed by F-15s?
No. The point, the way they, the F-15s, when they intercept an aircraft like that, you would, they do it in such a way that the crew or the passengers don't know, because they don't want to alarm the passengers or potential hijackers that could be on board. So they do it in a manner that's sneaky.
And so the jet is diverted to Whitehorse. It lands safely. The more than 200 passengers are safe. What, when you look back on this now, there was a lot of fear and confusion that day. No one really knew what was happening. Do you think that was the right decision, or what do you think about that now, looking through the lens of a decade later?
It's still pretty amazing that it would happen. It shouldn't have happened. I mean, in my mind, there's no doubt that it should not have happened. It's just a way off the wall event that happened, that someone, whoever it was, gave the order that probably wasn't really thinking about it.
And after September 11th, 2001, were you given any explanation from the FAA, from headquarters, about why this series of events went down the way that they did?
No, there was no discussion about it. I think they had us, the people working, you know, they congratulate us and pat us on the back and said, good job, and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And I'm not sure if there was any questions or follow-up on that, but it wasn't with us. We were just patted on the back and said, thanks, good job.
And so after nearly a decade, you've decided to talk publicly about this. Why now?
I just wanted to, you know, tell what happened, because I read so many articles that the question is, why did he do it? You know, why was he doing it? Well, it's because we told him. That's what I kept wanting to tell people, just kind of scream after the 11th and after his articles are coming out about the Korean Air. It's like, wow, why did he do this? He must have been hijacked. And no, it's because we told him, and because someone in Washington, D.C. ordered the aircraft to do that. There was no mystery on the part of the carrier. He just did what he was told to do.
Rick Wilder is a retired Anchorage air traffic controller who dealt with Korean Flight 085 on September 11, 2001. Lieutenant General Norton Schwartz was the NORAD commander on that day. He testified to the Alaska legislature in 2002 that the Korean pilot had misunderstood a request to confirm if he was squawking the hijack code for an order to do so. The Coast Guard says the crew of Northern Song has refloated the 84-foot charter vessel, and there were no injuries, damage, or pollution reported. Coast Guard Public Affairs Charlie Hengen says the Petersburg-based boat went aground early this morning on the southeast side of Baranof Island.
It was reported from the master that they were anchored in Deep Cove, and during low tide, the anchor just drug, and the vessel just went soft aground.
Hengen said the master contacted the Coast Guard early this morning. He reported the vessel was aground with 7 passengers and 4 crew on board. Hengen said a helicopter from Air Station Sitka and a cutter responded to the call as the Northern Song's crew took the passengers to shore.
The passengers donned their survival suits and they took a small inflatable life raft to shore. The helicopter crew transited over there, landed on the shore, and took the passengers aboard, and they took them safely back to Sitka, and there was no reported injuries.
The Northern Song is a steel-hulled yacht constructed in 1997 and owned by Dennis Rogers and Alaska Sea Adventures of Petersburg. The company had another grounding incident with a previous vessel, the 60-foot Alaska Adventurer, in late January 2010 near Holcomb Bay, south of Juneau. That vessel was not carrying passengers at the time, but it was seriously damaged, and the crew was rescued by the Coast Guard after abandoning ship. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Petersburg pulls together to save its nonprofit daycare.
It's very important. It's a lifeline to have the Children's Center up and operating.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Do you know a nonprofit executive or tribal leader who is at risk for job burnout? Nominate them for a Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical, which provides paid time away for personal renewal and growth. Go to Rasmussen.org for more information, but don't wait. Nominees must complete an application by October 1st. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Next week, volunteers will spread across Anchorage to survey and identify the most at-risk individuals of the city's chronic homeless. The ultimate objective is to place as many of these vulnerable individuals as possible into housing before winter. KSKA's Len Anderson has the story.
Catholic Social Services Executive Director Susan Bomaleski says the survey is only the first of several steps in a larger campaign. Catholic Social Services is a member of the Anchorage Coalition on Homelessness, the group coordinating the survey. When completed, the registry, as it's also called, will set each respondent on a vulnerability scale. The index was developed by Harvard University researcher Dr. James O'Connell. He found certain elements put some living on the street at greater risk than others. Bomaleski says among the most influential factor is the length of time on the street.
Because the number of years on the street is associated with probably not getting adequate nutrition, your body being stressed, things like that. Then there's medical conditions. Do people have respiratory conditions, or maybe they have chronic foot injuries, high blood pressure, conditions that if you're living on the street, you're not likely to get them treated. And then, of course, there's mental health issues, there's substance abuse issues.
Other elements include institutional history, jail, prison, hospital, and military, patterns of shelter use, and previous housing situations. After ranking the individual, the agencies will try to persuade the highest at risk to accept housing and services designed to help them. Bomaleski says one likely housing opportunity will be the Carlock Manor in Fairview, set to open this fall. The Anchorage Coalition on Homelessness needs about 100 volunteers, divided into 10 survey teams. They're still a little short of volunteers, but hope to be at full rank by Monday afternoon's 4-hour training session. The rather lengthy training session is necessary because not only do volunteers need to learn about the survey contents, but how to establish rapport with the homeless after waking them up.
It may sound crazy, but the survey takes place from 4 to 7 in the morning. You've got to be able to relate to people. They want to get the people, especially in the camps, before they would leave for the day.
The interview and time guidelines come from the National 100,000 Homeless Campaign. The goal is to find and house 100,000 chronically homeless individuals across the nation. The national group set Anchorage's target at 5, a figure Bomaleski finds too low for local homeless and the city's needs. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Beringia Days begin today in Nome. The conference and celebration brings together American and Russian scientists, government leaders, and local residents. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story from Nome.
Today was a day for fresh ideas in collaboration. For example, sled dog racing. Irina Yu Ryabukina is the head of the Sports and Tourism Committee in Chukotka. She says there are sled dog racers in Russia who would like to race in Alaska, and Alaskans would be welcome in Chukotkan races. The panel recognized scientific research as a place for improvement. Research teams have had trouble accessing work areas on different sides of the Bering Strait. The morning's second panel brought together marine mammal hunters for a discussion of native observations of climate change. Hunters say they're seeing later freeze-ups, less multi-year ice, and more storms. Paul Apangaluk from Gamble says the frequency of storms, combined with the need to go out long distances, makes for fewer trips. Russian hunters say they're starting to see new species of animals in Chukotka, including moose, lynx, sea otters, and on Big Diomede, hummingbirds. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
A panel discussion at the University of Alaska Anchorage tonight will be the culmination of a series of talks that were organized by the ANCSA at 40 Committee. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is approaching 4 decades in existence, and tonight's panel will feature Congressman Don Young, former Arctic Slope Regional Corporation official Oliver Levitt, and Chugach Alaska leader Sherry Beretta. Nellie Moore is moderating the discussion. She says the goal is to create a historical record.
people are still around for future generations. So this will all be kept at UAA, at the university, and it'll also be made available to the public.
Moore says the panels have examined what has been happening in the lead-up to the passage of ANCSA and to document the challenges and successes the Native corporations have had through the years so future Alaska Native leaders have the facts.
We're looking primarily at those emerging leaders, young people, trying to show that ANCSA is a living document and that knowledge of ANCSA is a big tool in helping young people look at some of the career choices and leadership choices that they'll make in the future.
The programs will be made available through Cable Channel 360 North and online in November as part of a Native American Awareness Month. They will also be archived at UAA. A large event is being planned for the actual 40th anniversary of ANCSA on December 18th.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
A little communication can save a life. Take time to connect with the ones you love and show them you care. This is National Suicide Prevention Week. Know the signs and take them seriously. For help and information, visit carolinealaska.com or call the 24-hour hotline 1-877-266-HELP. This message is sponsored by the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, providing information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. FAA.gov/go/FlyAlaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ed Schoenfeld. This week on AK, a community pulls together to save a daycare center. It can be hard to find childcare in small-town Alaska. The Petersburg Children's Center is a lifeline for working families in the small southeast town. But the nonprofit facility has struggled financially recently after a former executive director stole thousands of dollars. Thanks to an outpouring of community support, the daycare has remained open. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein recently toured the Children's Center to find the preschool kids and their caretakers fully engaged in the business of learning and play.
A handful of children are at play on the carpet in the Star Room. It's the classroom for toddlers from a year and a half to three. Miranda Cavisto is the substitute toddler teacher.
This age group, we do a lot of singing. We like to sing songs. We work on our ABCs, our shapes and colors.
The staff cares for kids as old as 12 in the after-school program and as young as 6 weeks in the nursery.
I really absolutely love it because I love to take care of the babies. It's a lot of fun.
Anna Yarborough is one of two teachers in the nursery where they've come up with lots of activities to keep the babies busy.
A while ago, we started painting with frosting and just adding like Kool-Aid. And I really wanted a sandbox, so I smashed Cheerios and had like a sandbox.
Blueberry painting?
Oh, blueberry painting. Yeah, we do blueberry painting when we go pick up the berries. And when it's nice, we all go for a walk. And
sounds like all the materials are edible for this age. Is that the idea? Because everything goes in their mouth?
Oh, yes, exactly. Everything goes in the mouth.
The Children's Center's been in business since 1974, and it's the only nonprofit daycare center in Petersburg. But it's been a rough road for the center this past year. The board fired the previous executive director this winter after discovering the theft of nearly $7,000. Former director Christy Ware has since pleaded guilty to the theft and paid back that money. She's currently awaiting sentencing under a plea agreement. However, the center also alleged that during her tenure as director, the organization was left with $45,000 in unpaid taxes charges, which generated thousands more in penalties and interest. Terry Falter has been with the center for 9 years and now serves as the new executive director. She says word quickly spread and the community support was overwhelming.
We weren't able to say it, give a whole lot of information because of the investigation. Within a couple weeks, just word of mouth in a small community, the local Emblem Club had came up here and given us a check, you know, a monetary donation. And then the Elks Lodge had formed a luau, which brought in a little over $4,000. And then, of course, the Emblem Club went on to do the silent auction, which brought in $17,000.
The city later kicked in $15,000, and there were other private donations, but Falter says it wasn't just the money. People volunteered their time to help around the center. With the community's help, she says the center's paid its debt down to $10,000 and hopes to finish paying it off by April. After firing the previous director, the all-volunteer board went through training with the 4-Acre Group, an organization that provides support for nonprofits in Alaska.
And every one of our board members attended that training, and their eyes got opened up. And because such a bad thing happened, but the good things that have came out of it is, again, the community support, the support of the families, the staff, and above all, how the board has came together and became a very, very strong board.
Over in the Sunshine Room, 4-year-old Angus is happy to talk about his favorite activities.
I like playing around, playing with my toys and books. And I always read them every day when I'm sleeping. And then my mom goes on my bedroom and I sleep.
Angus's mom, Dania Davis, has two kids. Angus's little brother, Edgar, is also at the Children's Center.
It's very important. It's a lifeline to have the Children's Center up and operating and willing to take the kids and give them a safe place and a reliable place for us to be able to work and provide our safe home environment. We can't do that unless they have a safe daycare environment. So I've just been really happy with their cooperation and patience, always.
Down by the bay, where the watermelons grow, back to my home, I did not go.
Between 40 and 50 kids are enrolled at the Children's Center this year. That's up from the past few years, and there's a waiting list. They still hope someday to expand.
My mother will say,
have you ever seen a whale with a polka-dot tail?
For AK in Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Awesome. Hey, give yourselves a hand. Yay!
And now it's time for our weekly trip around the state in the segment we call 300 Villages. First, we'll head to the Northwest Community of Wales on the Bering Strait, and then to Metlakatla, an island community south of Ketchikan.
My name is Frank Chrissy, and I am the mayor of the City of Wales. Well, we just got done with a festival. It's put on by the IRA Council, and they bring in dance groups from all over, as far as Barrow and Point Hope and Gamble, Diomede, Savoonga. It's a pretty well put together thing. It's everybody gets involved. The city does, the IRA does, the corporation, even the school is included. Let's say a once in a year festival that everybody gets to enjoy. Yeah, it's about the shortest point, Wales to Russia. We can see Russia. It's about 37 miles away, and it's. It depends on the person, what he wants to do. We've had people trying to go to Russia on a bathtub to a kite surfer, or just plain swimming. The only thing that we've had this summer is that we had a group of kite flyers, surfers, I guess you'd call them, and those two gentlemen made it from Russia to here. Well, every once in a while gives the people something new to look at. I mean, this is not an everyday occasion when you got two kite surfers flying over from Russia, and the weather conditions and everything here are so, let's say, quickly changed. Let's say when they enter the water, they're taking their lives in their own hands. That's the pure fact of it.
My name is Arthur Fawcett, mayor of Metlakatla, Alaska. We're on Ned Island. We're 18 miles south of Ketchikan, but we are the only Indian reservation in Alaska. Our tribe is Tsimshian. We originated, our grandparents moved here from Canada. There's another Metlakatla in Canada, so we call that Old Metlakatla, and this is New Metlakatla. We're finishing up the pavement of our 14-mile-long Walden Point Road. Hopefully that will be finished within the next 4 days. So with this road, in any kind of emergency, we'd be able to access Ketchikan and get our patients out that way. It's an opportunity for education, because they have the University of Alaska of Ketchikan, and there's a lot of our members that live in Ketchikan currently and work at the local shipyard. All around us, this increases would increase the economy.
That was Frank Crissy in Wales and Arthur Fawcett in Metlakatla. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. Tune in next week when we go hunting for edible mushrooms at the Fungus Festival in Cordova. I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Ben Matheson in Nome. Ed Schoenfeld was our guest host for AK this week. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
And by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. We all need energy to power our homes and businesses. Tapping renewable energy sources like wind, geothermal, and hydro helps keep our economy local, creating jobs, revenue, and power for the state. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by Renewable Energy Alaska Project, committed to creating a sustainable economic future for Alaska. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.